Yo! Yeah, that's my electric intro. A big yo. I am the coolest kid in 1984. All right, folks, it's Papa's Football Podcast. I am John Papa Giorgio, joined today by Howard Flood.
This is MTV Raps.
Yo, yeah. I that other Dr. Dre, and then what? No, it was Ed Lover, and
Ed
then
Lover.
Fat Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
That was great. There must have been such a battle behind the scenes in the rap culture to see who would be the Dr. Dre.
Is Ed Lover still doing Come On, Son? Is that still a thing on YouTube with him? Come On, Son.
No.
Oh, yeah, man. You got to check that out sometime. He'll go through pop culture and just criticize other celebrities and be like, come on, son.
He's
like a homeless person with a cardboard piece of cardboard, and he just has written Come On, Son on it.
That sounds devoid of creativity.
It's pretty funny, man, for those who are big Ed Lover fans.
Oh, no. I would definitely not count myself in those ranks.
You're racist.
Not that I hate him, but to say you're a fan of Ed Lover.
That to say you're not means you're a racist.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel that's like as random and esoteric as like rooting for Diamond and Pearl from Prince's New Power Generation. I don't know why you would care. I just don't. I'm sorry. All right. Show's website is pfpod.com. You can go there for every episode we've ever done, because who doesn't want to hear our thoughts from week 6 of the 2011 NFL season? Electric listening right there. Find the show on iTunes, especially using the podcast app on any Apple device you have. PAPA apostrophe S football podcast. And do that using Stitcher as well, if that is your podcast poison. But those are the big things. That's what we promote. Howard.
I'm still kind of pissed about the college football playoff. We don't normally talk college on here, but I definitely want to get to that later in the show, man, because it ruined my football weekend for sure.
We don't, and I forgot we were going to talk about it, so boy, am I happy you remembered. We do have to talk college football. For those that don't know, the four playoff teams were chosen, was it by the... Would
selection.
It be by the BCS?
Blue Ribbon Selection Committee.
Really?
Yeah.
So they have like a Pabst sponsorship, or that's just their own queer little self-important title? The Blue Ribbon Selection.
Well, Tom Osborne's on there. Barry Alvarez is on there. Condoleezza Rice is on there.
Oh,
I
my
think,
God.
Andrew Luck's father, I believe, is on there. Archie Manning was on there, but he ended up getting sick this year. I'm sorry, he had a knee surgery, I think. So.
Oh, God. I was going to say, if he is sick for the sake of the NFL, they need to just milk Archie Manning's prick. Like, if he ever gets hit by a car and he's just on life support and they're waiting for Cooper, Eli, and Peyton to get to the hospital to say their goodbyes, they better walk into their dad's dick in a sperm milking pump like you would put up to a dairy cow.
Yeah, man.
And they're just like, what's going on here? It's like, we need all the Archie Manning sperm we can get. I've said that a million times. If you want to lift ghetto America out of poverty, just give unwed mothers Archie Manning semen. And there will be a generation of mobile quarterbacks, the likes of which we have never seen. It'll look like a bunch of Peyton Mannings with a tan in the league in 25 years.
On a very different but related note, Grantland has done features on the rise of the name Shaq amongst college athletes today.
Oh, no.
It's really spiked because, yeah, like Shaquille O'Neal was the most dominant NBA center about 18 years ago, 19, 20 years ago. So
I was 90. Really, you know, it was 93. When I recall the Shaq attack posters,
yeah,
adorning the wall of every friend I had. So yeah,
Kazam was such a good.
Is
movie.
There a lot of are there like a lot of bows though that should have entered the league a couple years ago? Because I feel like everyone's wall right before that was just Bo Jackson with his hands across a baseball bat over his shoulders wearing football pads.
Well, I think Shaq had the double home run of also participating in Hollywood. I know his movies were not, you know, gonna stand the test
of
time.
You stop right there before you talk about Kazam anymore.
But I'm just saying, he's made good television guest appearances. He's able to be a TV personality, and I think that's what is different between him and Bo, because Bo was great on the field. You ever heard an interview with Bo?
He's a soft-spoken man.
Yeah.
Let's say it that way.
He's not much of a marketing campaign outside of other people talking about him.
Like, Bo retired, and it's like, what are you gonna do, Bo? And it's like, I'm just going to walk off into the mountains and uppercut bears in the dick and then eat them. And you're like, wow, you can do that, you athletic freak, you.
Yeah, no, the 30 for 30 showed him. He basically just hunts. I mean, that's his...
Yeah.
He's a trophy hunter now, and he's so intense about it.
No, he's an interesting guy. He really... Yeah. There was an article God, I don't even know what it was published as Bumani Jones was talking about Bo, along with another guy. Really good read.
Yeah.
Just look up Bo Jackson, Bumani Jones. You'll find something.
Mm. Dick Schaap. Dick Schaap wrote the book on Bo Jackson.
Did it just come out? I don't know. They were doing something about like his 25th or 30th anniversary or some junk, okay. Or 20th, I guess, at this point.
One of the best sports it's technically an autobiography, but Bo Jackson wrote it with Dick Schaap. It's Bo Knows Bo. It's supposed to be one of the best sports books in history.
Well, before we get off Shaq and get to football, I want to put out one last thing, because you talked about him acting in things and showing his chops. He has one of the best cameos of all time in Freddy Got Fingered at the very end, where, what's her name? Is it Julie Andrews, the chick who was in Airport or Airplane?
I've never seen either of those movies, I have to admit.
Okay, well, I think less of you for not having seen Freddy. Airplane, I don't care about. But she was in that. She plays Freddy's mom. And at some point, she gets divorced from Rip Torn and takes on Shaq as her lover. And during the end of the movie, like, she's like, Shaq, I have to leave you. My baby boy is back in the country. Spoiler alert, Tom Green was abducted by the Taliban at some point.
Wow.
And I believe the movie, freakishly enough, predates 9/11. That's
makes
it very fascinating.
Yeah.
So he comes to America, and Shaq is really, he's dejected about this. And he's like, I pierced my nipples for you. I gave it to you like this. And he just starts bucking. He's like wearing these purple like spandex pants. And to anyone that ever, because I've heard this rumor more than once, that Shaq is packing nothing.
Oh, wow.
Just watch this scene and you will realize Shaq is packing everything you think Shaq should be packing. This monster. It's like when you're a kid and you're grocery shopping with your mom and she puts a cucumber in a bag and you're just swinging it by the end of the bag right. Down the aisle, like a billy club kind of. Yeah. That's what it looks like doing in his pants. It just looks like a bucking billy club cucumber just billowing around these pants. Now that we're off the topic of sweet black dick, let's talk some football from the weekend. I'm not going to do the Skins thing first because you want me to cultivate our national audience.
Yeah.
Which I guess technically we have. We have two listeners in two different states. That is national. I guess my pick then for the story of the week, it's not exactly sexy, but the Steelers beating the Bengals in Cincinnati.
I am disappointed that this story is getting short shrift.
It really is not getting covered. And in terms of the playoff race, it's huge. Like, I realize the AFC North doesn't seem like it's just producing an incredibly potent team the way the NFC West might, but it's still a team. I would never, never question the playoff pedigree of any team really coming out of the North, even the goddamn Browns.
Yeah, I think whoever comes out of that division, it could be three teams still. They really are not a team you want to see coming into your stadium if you're New England or Denver, that's for sure.
These are all teams that, okay, at the very least, the Ravens have their win from, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And were just fierce as hell in the playoffs for years. I think their first miss in what? Since Flacco came in was last year?
John Harbaugh has upset Belichick more than once in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, hell, that one time a couple years ago when New England went to the Super Bowl, it was because, Cundiff shanked a kick?
Yeah.
That's it, man. That's
and Lee Evans dropped the pass. It was just a surefire touchdown that would have won the game.
Yeah.
And they just need that field goal to go to overtime.
Yeah. And
so
they
it was like comedy bears on that final drive. But then the Ravens went ahead and won the Super Bowl the next year.
And the Steelers have won two in the last decade. They've gotten to one and lost in the last decade.
I'm actually very critical of Ben Roethlisberger on this show. The Rapisberger really has shown, though, this year he probably deserves the money he's earning. I've just said that throughout the season he doesn't deserve to be paid as an elite quarterback, and he hasn't, which is why he has two rings.
He always
took pay cuts.
He looks like a big, dumb dunce. It's hard to root for him. He looks like, who is it, Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds? That's really what he looks like.
Chuck! That guy?
No, not Chuck. That's Sloth, right? Okay, you were doing a proper impression, and I just...
That's the Ogre, right? He's the one who would always scream, Chuck, right?
I don't remember. I just remember, he drank a ton of beer and burped one time, and when I was 8, I thought that was the funniest goddamn thing on Earth. And then by Nerds 4, Nerds in Love, he was a nerd too. and you're like, okay, this is tired at this point.
But no, it impresses me to see Pittsburgh go to Cincinnati and pull off a victory, because I was going into this weekend thinking they were going to split their two games with Cincinnati. Cincinnati would win at home, and then Pittsburgh would win at home. And now you have a situation where the Steelers have a leg up on the Bengals. So
yeah, they play again week 17, and I think if the Steelers win out, that's that.
Yeah, I mean, that's still a big if to me. I think they could still lose two of the three games they have remaining, though. They're not a team that's been consistent all year, so I don't know why people assume they're now in the playoff hunt. It's a great win this week. I'll give them that.
I think they've gotten more solid as the season goes on.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they can't lay a big fat turd on the field one of these upcoming weeks, but it seems like they're winning when they should be winning, which really painfully I have to say about Seattle as well.
Very clear with Seattle. I disagree with you about the Steelers, but Seattle for sure.
Oh, God. I can't tell you the first 6 weeks, if I had to perform sexually, I would just think of Seattle's record for the first 6 or 8 weeks of this year, and I would be hard as granite. And now they're just winning, and now they look very strong again, and I hate it. I hate that team. I wish the 12th man were the HIV living in the veins of everyone on that roster. But
much to your dismay, the 49ers are not going to be a team that stands in their way, it appears. So
yeah, oh, don't get me wrong. I hate the Niners, too, but, you need them. It's the same way, I bust out the Hitler and Stalin analogies, everyone took 5 years of World War II history, I did. It's the same way, Stalin's a piece of crap, but when he's killing Hitler for you, you're like, yay, Stalin, you're the best, dude. That's how I feel about the Niners. As long as they can kind of stick it to the Seahawks, I'm like, okay, sure, Frank Gore, woo. And now that they just suck, I'm like, you are worthless to me, and I've always hated you, and I want you to know that now.
Now, I'll say this, though. We on the show have been critical of Colin Kaepernick ever since that RG3 game. I guess that's one
Colin
of the...
Krapernick slam dunk. Go on.
But, we watched the game that essentially got RG3 benched against the 49ers.
Yeah.
And everybody, all they could talk about that week in most media outlets was how poorly RG3 had played. And very little discussion was put towards, the Niners only won by 4. Why did they only win by 4 over someone who was historically bad?
At home, if I remember correctly, right? Yeah.
And the answer is Colin Kaepernick, who is being sacked more than 3 times a game. He above and beyond is just leading the lead and getting sacked. He just doesn't know what's going on back there.
Does anyone in the game right now look dumber from a business perspective than Colin Kaepernick? His every dollar in that new contract of his was tied to incentives.
Yeah.
Pretty much, he had to win the Super Bowl and then decapitate his foe and drink from his skull in order to get $5 million, $6 million this year. So I don't know what he's getting, but it's bad. I believe if they don't even make the postseason, is there escalators? Is there a single escalator that's going to kick in?
He's just bad enough right now where I don't know if he would be welcome back in San Francisco next year.
You could let him go with ease. And Harbaugh, they've always said, that Harbaugh is an unliked asshole in that city. But no one could let him go because it's I'm sorry. Do you want Coach McCuddles or do you want the asshole that gets you to the NFC Championship at least every year?
Right.
And it's asshole. But now that he's not getting you, it's bye, unsuccessful asshole.
There's a very strong chance he'll be traded to Oakland now.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, so that's the latest rumor that's being reported. And I could see it, though, because, at this point, David Carr just beat Colin Kaepernick. So there's something to be said.
Yeah, David Carr looks like the coolest
Derek,
quarterback.
Sorry. Derek.
Yeah, son of a bitch. David Carr is still in a dark room, cringing from offensive linemen. Yeah, Derek Carr, he seems like the best of the bunch. I know at the start of the season, the whole scuttlebutt was... You know what, Blake Bortles, the Jags did a good job on him. And I'm not saying he stinks. It's not like a Blaine Gabbert thing all over again. But during the course of the season, Derek Carr, I think everyone's like, you know what, that dude, that was the quarterback to get this year. And that's exciting for LA, man.
I wouldn't go there.
I would.
It's up and down.
I'm not going to say that he's a stone cold lock. It isn't like watching Andrew Luck a couple years ago or something. But out of what we've seen from the rookie quarterbacks of this class, he's the best.
Nah, I take Bridgewater still.
You and your love of the black quarterback.
You're racist.
I have nothing against them, but Teddy Bridgewater is not good. He's got a lot of wins, though, son of a bitch.
He's been winning, man. So yeah. He can win. He's a winner. And that's
I'm not
why
prejudiced.
I'm gonna...
I won't give any benefit. I won't give quarter to the Negro quarterback.
Dude, I'm just not impressed. Like, Derek Carr has not played well every game. He's been very inconsistent.
I've seen him in, like, one game, and he looked decent. I watched when they beat the Chiefs. And, like, what I've seen out of Bridgewater, I've probably seen, like, 1.5 games out of Bridgewater, and it was nothing that impressed me. So, I don't know. You're arguing between, like, hey, are you really pumped for McDonald's or Burger King? It's like,
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, it's not the same as the excitement that came in with Andrew Luck and RG3.
Yeah, it's not Chipotle, to complete the metaphor.
Say, but speaking of Luck, you realize he's on pace to break Peyton Manning's record?
Which record?
Year, the passing yards in a single season.
I didn't know that. I knew he was having an insane year, and it just drives me nuts as a Redskins fan because you just sit in your room and you just cut your wrists and you're like, one pick away. And yeah, I didn't realize it was quite that historic. I had heard it, he was having a historic season, but I thought it was like for weird things like,
I think it's largely a byproduct of the new rules because honestly, he's not looking as good as he could be. And that doesn't tell me that, oh, he's going to be scary good. It's going to be ridiculous when he's throwing for 6,000 yards a season. I mean, that will be crazy when it happens, but the new rules are just making it impossible not to throw the ball almost every down. So I'm pretty disappointed in the NFL and the way that they're diminishing all of the passing records of yore.
Yeah, you're not Dan Marino, but you can still be sad about it. It is. It's every passing record from, like, I don't know what, 2000 onward, to me there should be asterisks. Like, the game has just changed so much.
Really since 2005 especially. I mean,
you've
just seen
so many.
That was a
big rule change. That
was
a big down the pike.
That was a big I call it the Peyton Manning rule, yeah. They just started enforcing more pass interference. So defenders couldn't jump basically through a receiver in order to tip the ball. Basically, you could have like a hand on the back and then like reach in front and tip the ball.
You
that's
had to
now interference.
Yeah, you had to be very careful.
That's how New England beat Indianapolis every single time in the first 5 years of.
And not just that, I feel like refs are really quick to call pass interference, even when it's not pass interference, just to be quote unquote safe about it.
I mean, you're seeing more offensive pass interference. Like, there was a big offensive pass interference call against the Chiefs yesterday. So you're seeing it called to some extent on both players. But yeah, it heavily disfavors the defenses right now.
All right. Well, let's get to, the remainder of the games from this week. Speaking of Andrew Luck and the Colts, they squeak by the Browns at home by 1 point. I think they won 25-24.
It was actually, it was at Cleveland.
Yeah, that's what I'm sorry. Yeah, I meant to convey that. My words might have effed that one up. I meant to say it was in Cleveland, and they get by the Browns.
Not a pretty win, but a win.
Yeah, like I'll always say, who gives a crap if 8 of your wins were like by 2 points and you looked ugly in them? String together 4 decent wins on top of that, and guess what? You're 12-4. Ta-da.
I mean, the big problem with that game for Luck was two turnovers that resulted in touchdowns for the Browns. And that really just highlights the bigger question now about the Browns quarterback situation because, even though they had 24 points, Hoyer only led the team for 10 of those points. So what should the Browns do going forward? That's the conversation that doesn't go away.
Well, I know that last week it was pretty strongly rumored up until, was it Mike Pettine or whatever his name is? He announced, was it Tuesday or Wednesday, that he was going to stay with Hoyer. And I forgot he had a conversation with one of the offensive linemen, if I recall, Joe something or other.
Yeah.
And he said that the dude conveyed the thought that from the team that if you jump to Manziel at this point, it almost seemed like you were giving up on this year and just trying to see what you had for next year. First of all, I think that's asinine. When the guy stinks. And Hoyer, trust me, I rooted for Hoyer when he was doing well. I'm like anyone else in this country. When you're doing well and you're performing, keep the guy in there. And the instant you suck, pull him out. So I know that as of last week, he had a 10-5 record as their starter. I'm guessing now it's 10-6. Yeah. And he was the only starting Cleveland quarterback to have a winning record in the last like 20 years. So it's hard to pull against that. But at the same time, at some point you have to acknowledge, look, dude, our record is due to our defense and due to a strong running game. Like, he is actively hurting our chances.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the situation like this, and I actually side with the players on this, where you do have to start Hoyer, in my opinion, for one more week, because he led the Browns to a win at Cincinnati a few weeks ago, and they're playing Cincinnati this upcoming week, week 15. You have to let him redeem himself against this divisional in-state foe. I mean, it's just, it's, you can't stick Manziel in when he's when Hoyer's already beaten the upcoming divisional opponent.
I guess you can't, but the Brian Hoyer that we've seen in the last month compared to the Brian Hoyer of the first, what, like eight games of the season, it's night and day. It's very weird, and I don't know what's going on, like if defenses have figured him out or what. But the dude had a fairly good touchdown-interception ratio, and the past three games, he's what, like, zero touchdowns is like seven picks or something. I don't know what he's up to, but it's bad. I know as of last game, it was 0-5 for those two games, and he must have tagged on a couple of picks in this performance.
I just think you got to give him a chance to win this game, and if they lose at they host Cincinnati.
I suppose, but that's your season. Like, you have to accept that's your season.
I don't know, man. I look at the situation. We were just talking about rookie quarterback. You got Derek Carr and Blake Bortles and Teddy Bridgewater starting for three loser teams. It's just very clear that this year, sticking a rookie quarterback was not going to bring your team a playoff bid.
2012.
Yeah, it's not like that whatsoever.
2012.
Yeah, not at all.
All right, speaking of quarterbacks struggling, what the hell is wrong with Peyton Manning? The dude had zero touchdowns, two picks last night. I think he had 51 games in a row with a touchdown. That streak is over. And he's having his toughest times in the league the last couple of games since, I believe, like either the 08 or 09 season. So we're talking like half a decade since he's seen this kind of performance.
I think it's a decision of the team, and Peyton's on board with it, to commit more to the run. So he's having to think in a way that he's not accustomed. I've always criticized Peyton Manning for not thinking enough about how to run the ball, because that's what you really need in order to have an optimal passing game. And I just feel like he has always had that missing component to the great performance every week. I just feel like he's very inconsistent about maintaining possession of the ball for his team. For so many years in Indianapolis, his team would barely have the ball for 20 minutes. And they go 9-7, 10-6, you know, but they would struggle to win games because the defense was tired. Now you have a team that is running the ball, they're dominating clock, and this is a good thing. This is how the Denver Broncos are going to win the Super Bowl if they are this year. Because if they're just going to drop back and let him do his thing, I mean, we saw what happened in last year's Super Bowl. That's not the way to win a championship for this team.
You mean like botching a snap and getting the safety on the first play of the game?
That's points, man. But you're talking like, what? They lost by 45? Like, it was ridiculous.
Let me just put this out there. I don't know if we've ever had this conversation straight up. That first play happened. I swear to Christ, I almost turned the game off right there. And I'm not exaggerating. I'm like, they are going to lose, and they are going to lose horribly.
Yeah, I wanted to see what Russell Wilson could do to get his team in the end zone. So it took a minute for them to get a touchdown eventually. But yeah, no.
I saw that first play, and I'm like, well, boys, we're playing Diablo by halftime. Get the Xbox warmed up now, because I'm telling you what the rest of the evening's going to be.
Ah, but I enjoyed watching that blowout. Like, I don't understand why people are ever surprised when Peyton Manning loses games. He has a flawed understanding of offensive football, in my opinion. So he's a great passer. He understands, like, the plays that he can execute. But I don't think his situational understanding of football is where it needs to be. And John Fox has been a great addition to his career, because I think previous head coaches would just let Peyton do whatever. And John Fox is actually in a position where he has to say to Peyton, hey, you know what? We have to run the ball, man. We just have to do this. You need to get better at this. So for the first time, I actually can see Peyton Manning in the future becoming an NFL offensive coordinator. In the past, I just looked at him as a guy who's going to end up running a college football team in the future, because the way that he thinks, it's not real football to me. That's why he only has one ring, in my opinion. It's just he's so pass-oriented. He's never really understood how to run the ball. And he's finally getting there, though, as he becomes a aged season quarterback. He's finally understanding how to get the ball in the end zone with his running back. So I don't think it's a bad thing at all that he had zero passing touchdowns this week. They had 3 rushing touchdowns, man. I'll take it.
Okay. Look, if they win the Super Bowl on the back of this, then everything's great. And I will acknowledge that he has learned some new tricks. If they're like a one and done in the playoffs, I'm going to be even less satisfied. Like, I'm fine with them losing on the back of Peyton because half the time that's the reason his teams were there to begin with.
Right. That's fair.
But if they do this chintzy crap and they get bounced immediately, it will not feel satisfying. I guess the rest of the stuff from the league this week, and then I'll do like 2 minutes on the Skins in particular.
Well, I want to bring up real quick, speaking of running the ball, New England did a really good job running the ball Sunday night. So,
oh, you mean that game I couldn't watch? Because from 9 to 10, my DVR in my house is double recording 90 Day Fiance, and the Kardashians take over, I don't know, what the hell is it, Long Island, or wherever the hell. And then my brother just watched 90 Day Fiance from 10 to 11, so the game was done by the time I got the TV.
Well, I mean, Brady did not look impressive in the first half. I'll say that. You know, the Patriots do have their weaknesses, but one of the things that seems really unfair is for LeGarrette Blount to now show up in a Patriots uniform this late in the season, fresh, and he's crushing it out there. It's not really going to be fair when it comes to New England running the ball come playoff time, just because they were able to add pretty good running back halfway through the season, and he doesn't have a lot of wear and tear yet, so he's looking really good, man.
That LeGarrette is a nice Blount's find. Who did really they nice. Peel him from? Steelers?
Steelers released him, man.
That's right, okay. I guess the biggest news from that game last night was the Chargers coach Mike McCoy just went depressingly conservative in his play calling, and a lot of people think cost the Chargers any chance they had of winning the game. Was the final score like 24-14 or something like that?
Yeah, 24-16, something like 24, that.
Okay, yeah. So they were down by over a touchdown, and I think it was like 4th-and-4 on the 50 with 6 minutes left. And he went for a punt, and everyone lost their minds that he didn't go for it on 4th down. And that was the big news, because the
23-14 was the final score, yeah.
23-4, okay, yeah.
But it was 14-13 in the fourth, so they were up a point in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, the big news was that he didn't go for it, and the Patriots respond by taking something like 4.5 minutes off the clock. So by the time they got the ball, it was like down by more than a touchdown, 2 minutes left, you're boned.
Yeah.
So that was kind of sad. I feel for the guy.
By the way, one of the 2 Chargers touchdowns was an amazing play off of a fumble.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Guy basically just the fumble was forced, and then one of the defenders who had helped on the tackle felt the ball kind of like trickling towards his knees, and he just made the savvy move of like getting up quickly and grabbing the ball between his legs. It was almost like a crossover dribble in basketball.
Okay.
And he just like immediately began to sprint towards the end zone. So he was full sprint before anybody realized he even had the ball. It was beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jesus. I can see being bitter about losing. But that's one of those things with McCoy. Like, if they botched the 4th-and-4, everyone's just like, why'd you go for it? It's just thankless. People are horrible.
Yeah.
It would have been like, 4th-and-2, I get. 4th-and-4, you had 6 minutes left. Bam, bam, bam. Ugh, just F off. And Cards squeak by Chiefs on a couple questionable plays, or I'm sorry, questionable calls.
Yeah, I mean, both these teams are still in the mix for the playoffs.
Much more the Cards than the Chiefs, man. The Chiefs are taking a bit of a nosedive. They're at 7-6 right now.
Yeah, I mean,
they're absolutely not getting in via the West, so they're looking at just a wild card.
Yeah, we'll see what shakes out in the next week for the AFC wild card.
As we said before, Seattle looked regrettably good against the Eagles, and that's one of those situations where I hate both teams, but I was pulling for Philly. Just, ugh, I hate how that feels. I really, really do. And as a Redskins fan, I have to do at least a 2-minute segment on them losing to the St. Louis Rams 24-0. What bad do you want to focus on first here? Is it the game started and the entire upper deck of the stadium was empty? Do we go with that? Do we go with the fact that Jeff Fisher, who I can't get enough of now,
coach of the year in my opinion right now.
Oh, the deuce he dropped on them even before the game started for the coin flip. He sends out 6 captains who happened to be 6 of the 7 draft picks that they ultimately got from trading that second pick to the Skins, the RG3 pick.
It's just such an amazing, such
what a dick move. And I say that with all anime hearts in my eyes. Oh, it's such a prick move.
That's like just the art of psychological warfare right there. That's
Oh, that's some amazing, Sun Tzu man. Stuff. Yeah.
I definitely think that he's done enough this year without Sam Bradford at the helm. That's such a handicap on his salary cap numbers.
You have to be gone. Like, Bradford has to go. He's the last year of those megaton rookie contracts. Yeah. He's had 2 years now where his ACL pops like a guitar string at a punk show.
I think they're going to give him one more year, man. I really
do. No, because this isn't even under a contract, right? Isn't he free agent end of this year, or am I wrong?
No, I think he has one more year on it.
No kidding.
You know, in free agent, if he were a free agent next year, he's not going to get the same money he's making now.
Well, that's what I thought, like, the contract ended, and so I thought they pretty much had to let him walk.
Who's going
to
let him start? Who's really going to take him on right now based on his track record and say, you're our guy, you're our starter?
I don't know. I don't know who does that in this league. I don't know.
I think St. Louis is the only team that has a serious shot for him as a player. So
he has killed that team 2 years in a row now.
But not nearly as bad as RG3 has killed the Redskins, which is why Jeff Fisher's move at the coin toss was so awesome.
Yeah, just sending out those six players, and it's like, who are these guys? And then, like, by halftime, the tweet circulated, like, oh, that's everyone they got for all those first-rounders. Hilarious. Oh, man. First home shutout since 09. Gruden looked completely outcoached. I'm trying to remember who it was from the post that said last week RG3 was as good as done. This week, he's saying it's very likely that Gruden could be a one-and-done.
It's very possible. It's just everybody is making it seem on ESPN like you might see both guys back next year. You really might have them both back, RG3 and Gruden, because they need more stability in the organization. And so they want them both to give it another shot at the beginning of next year.
If Gruden is gone this year, I will do whatever it takes. I don't know if it's a religious ceremony, like I need holy water sprinkled on my head or something like that. I'll do whatever it takes to just not care about this team anymore. Because I can't take it, dude. It ruins my enjoyment of this sport. I'm not saying this lightly. By like week six, you know they're out of the mix already. Yeah. Nearly every year. And it's like, how many games about teams I truly don't care about do I have to watch? Like, I'm watching the same way as, well, I don't want to say a woman. But, like, I'm just watching for the sake of decent football week in, week out with no rooting interest. Just happy if there's a nice 4 p.m. game. Happy if there's a nice Sunday night game. But I have nothing I care about. I have teams I root against. That's it. I don't want to see anyone from the East get rings outside of the Skins. Right. I don't want to see the Seahawks get rings. I don't want to see Brady get rings. Outside of that, I don't give a flying F. Oh, Steelers, no rings either. That's it. Anyone else? Sure, whatever. But it puts a real damper on your ability to enjoy the game if you don't have a rooting interest. I know you're not in the same boat. You're kind of a mercenary with what you watch, but...
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, going back to when we were kids, I was following the 49ers bandwagon at a time. They were just bringing it home every other year. And what happened with me, though, is I just found that I wanted to follow the players who were on that team. So as Joe Montana went to Kansas City and then, you know, Jerry Rice went to Oakland... I found myself following individual players, and that really is the most satisfying way for, I think, anyone to follow football, in my opinion. Yeah, I understand when people are fans of teams, especially ones that have good teams, but it's just sad listening to local sports talk radio in Washington now, where people have been miserable for 20 years. It has to not... I can't believe, like, having lived in Baltimore and spent time going back and forth between Baltimore and Washington, it is so different listening to sports radio in Baltimore, where they actually have a team that wins.
Oh, yeah. Like, you can dissect a team's winning performance every other week and not just, like, look at the turd spiraling down the bowl.
Yeah, even last year. So they're coming off the Super Bowl victory, you know?
Yeah.
They're riding high, and yet, you know, they struggled last year. And they were able to complain about things that were preventing them from taking it to the next level, being, you know, the playoffs and another championship run.
Yeah, some sort of dynasty.
Hoping to get into the playoffs because they thought they could really make a run to the Super Bowl. Whereas for the Redskins, like, fans here in Washington are just so sad. Like, even a whiff of not being eliminated from the playoffs in December, I mean, that's all you guys could ever hope for, is, like, we're not eliminated.
Tickets, the story was, here's another sad thing. The story was tickets on the secondary market were going for $3, with some of the really good ones going for $5. I would pay more to go to a Filipino sex show than I would to see the Redskins yesterday. Like, I mean, that's, I would have to pay more to see a woman get mounted by a donkey for pesos right. than I would have had to watch the Skins yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, for people who are not in the D.C. area and don't know about the stadium, for a fan like me where I just like football, and even if, I mean, I want to see good football, but for that cheap, it's tempting to go just watch an NFL game. Here's the problem. It's in the middle of nowhere. It is not in a location where after the game you can go out and hit a bar scene or something like in Baltimore.
No, it's right next to an artificial little strip mall, which is on the grounds of, you know, the Capitol Center.
It's massively inconvenient to get there.
Horribly so.
Traffic is awful. Public transportation is awful. It's a terrible experience all around before you even show up for the game.
If the ticket was free, would I care to still pay the $25 or $35 I would pay for parking so that I could eat $15 chicken fingers and hold in a piss until halftime so I get kidney stones? Yeah, that sounds like a blast.
It's just when you go to the Ravens Stadium, you walk out and then you hit the Inner Harbor. You could probably get laid that night. You know what I mean?
It's such a
different experience.
You are bending over some bitch with herpes, pulling up her purple camouflage miniskirt and sinking it right in there.
Make sure you meet a girl from Dundalk and make sure she's 18. That's all I'll say.
I care about one of those things. Oh, man. What else? Speaking of DC sports media, I was listening to 980. I don't know who the hell was on 980 at like 1 p.m. this afternoon or noon, but the guy sounded like he was almost in hysterics and in tears because in this city, we've hailed London Fletcher, who retired this season, one of the middle linebackers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was, I don't know, just revered as this great guy. And right before game time, like I want to say 11 a.m. Sunday, he just launched into Jim Haslett, the current Redskins defensive coordinator, and was going on and on about how the dude blew. And if you heard the tone of his voice, instead of just reading them as like tweets after the fact, dude was pissed. Dude sounded angry, and I forget again who was on 980, but he was like almost in tears, like, we've been fools. He isn't the nice man we thought he was. And at first I wanted to smack him for being a silly little bitch.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, why are you an adult that cares about what this guy does?
Right.
Short of him, like, yeah, fingering your teenage daughter. Well, who gives an ass? But, I mean, it was just another. I was telling you this by the end of Sunday. And I do a lot of our prep off of NFL section on the site reddit.com.
Yeah.
I want to say in the top five stories, the top two were Redskin stories about the stunt that Fisher pulled.
Right.
And London Fletcher. And then like number five was the fact that St. Louis had two shutouts in a row. And then you also had Jay Gruden as a one and done in the top 15. I mean, they dominate NFL stories still nationally. For all the wrong reasons.
You guys were a non-story for over a decade before RG3 showed up. Yeah. He actually brought interest back to football in Washington.
And you reminded me, TMZ getting in on the action. How goddamn often, unless it's, Adrian Peterson beating his kid or Ray Rice, unless it's completely a story that would blow everyone's mind, that transcends football, they were doing a story about, like, just locker room dysfunction. Within the Redskins, they never do hardcore sports like that.
Yeah.
And they took the time to throw the Skins under the bus a little. And someone, you know, an unnamed source in the locker room was like, everyone effing hates RG3. No one believes in him. And he needs to get into politics because that's what he's good for. Like, he's good for building up his own brand. That's it. All right. With that, get into your spiel about the college bowl, the playoffs. It's like four teams this year.
Well, I mean, we talk occasionally about college football when it's unavoidable, really, for persons like yourself who don't really follow college, right? Like, this is not a story that you've been following much all season, right?
I mean, I know from friends of mine on Facebook who are big into Ohio State and stuff like that. Like, yeah, I just know that the top, it cuts to a playoff of four.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of debate about the top six teams.
Yeah, well, the top three teams for sure. Word locks. You can jumble them any order you want, and I'm not really concerned about those three teams, but between Oregon, Alabama, and Florida State, those are the top three teams that clearly were going to make the bracket. The fight was over. Two teams from the Big 12, TCU and Baylor, and Ohio State, like who of those three deserved to be in this playoff?
And yeah, so, and yeah. I think from what I read, Ohio kind of had like the shakiest credentials, but had some incredible win this weekend, like on the back of like a third string quarterback who was starting for the second time.
I mean, they recruit well at the position, so their third string could start in a lot of places, but it really seems that they were given priority for a variety of reasons that people attribute, but the reason I'm going to say that Ohio State was picked over Baylor and TCU has to do with one thing. It has nothing to do with, the Big 12 doesn't have a conference championship game, and that was the difference. It doesn't have anything to do with necessarily the media bias that goes towards Ohio State or Big 10 grads, because the best journalism schools in the country tend to be out of the Big 10. Mm-hmm. And so that's a conspiracy theory there, too. For me, it just comes down to pure and simple legacies, dynasties. Like, who are the schools that have more of a claim of being football powerhouses? And it's just solely based on historical reputation. No matter how much they talk about Ohio State playing really strongly at the end of the season and surviving all these like tough injuries at the quarterback position, the reality is Ohio State has won multiple national championships in their history.
Well, not just that. To me, it's a viewership thing, man. It's like, if I'm going to pick an NBA Finals, I would love to have the Knicks versus the Lakers.
Right.
I'm not going to pick, the Pacers versus the Raptors. They're probably both in the East. But.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because the biggest problem for the college football playoff in its first year is if you had three teams from the Gulf Coast.
That's what I'm saying. You're going to have three guys covering the whole same zone, and then what, Oregon balancing it out? They're going to get the rest of the country? No, they're going to get like this little chunk of the Northwest.
Yeah, so adding that Big Ten team in there, Ohio State draws in a lot of fans from the Midwest and even the Northeast. There's a lot of grads of Big Ten schools streaming from Boston to D.C. And you just weren't going to have those people if it was Florida State, Alabama, and a Texas school.
Like, no, it sounds like a goddamn SEC championship at that point.
Yeah, no. So that's,
what did people expect? Like, it's so obvious they need to just increase the size of this format. Like, people are balls fired up over four teams.
Yeah.
Like, why don't you draw from point A to point B, like, more weeks of this, more revenue, more
So there's a couple things here. I have to put out there, I actually prefer the BCS system to what this currently is, but having seen this in operation, I'm finally a person who will finally say publicly, I'm now in favor of a bigger playoff than what they have. Because a four-team playoff is absurd when you have five power conferences. It's idiotic to design it. I can't believe these are the leading institutions in America where you say, these are the power five conferences. Oh, we're going to have a four-team playoff.
Yeah.
Guess what? Every year, one of those conferences is going to be pissed off. They got excluded.
No, it needs to go up to eight at the very least. Like, all that makes sense.
I only have one issue with an eight-team field now.
Before it sounds too close to the A-team?
Well, no. Before, when you had just two teams picked and then there was this one bowl game, I liked it. I realized there was controversy with that. But if we're going to go to a playoff, it has to go to eight. And the only problem with that really is asking people who have professional careers in the NFL to play that many extra games in college. That's the one issue I have with it. So.
I got no issue there.
I think it's wrong not to
compensate
these
guys. Don't they usually bounce after, like, they can bounce as of sophomore year. I know that's...
If they redshirt 1 year.
Okay, so that's more of a quarterback move, I guess, but...
Running back should redshirt. If I were a high school running back, I would redshirt. I would advise high school running backs to try to redshirt, because there's no reason to put the extra wear and tear on your body.
Yeah, you want to have that long, until I'm age 29, running back career ahead of you.
Yeah, but just to sacrifice your body for free, I don't think it's good. I don't think it's right. And that's why, for me, as long as they're going to call it an amateur sport, they need to take better care of them, because those guys have a lot of money coming their way after that that college football playoff. So the big problem to me, though, is these conference championship games that were terrible this year. Absolute garbage. They add nothing. So I think the compromise between what I'm saying and what you're describing with the A-team playoff, they have to get rid of these conference championship games. They're so dumb.
Morph them into playoff.
Yeah, because it's just like, I don't want to see Arizona play. Well, actually, that was like a decent one, because that was a rematch of a game, the only loss that Oregon had this year. But watching Wisconsin play Ohio State, no. That was a terrible game. That was absolutely awful.
The only thing I know about Wisconsin is they got the Badger, and a friend of mine, his dad went to that school, and he had a shirt from the 70s, like a booster shirt that he would wear back when we all dressed all retro and alternative right. In the 90s. And it just said, F 'em, Bucky, with like the F spelled out, and it was just Bucky holding a huge middle finger. I'd be like, I don't really care about college ball, but that shirt is amazing. It always made me laugh. Do we want to do anything more on that, or just get to next week's games?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sour on the whole college football playoff format. I think we do need eight teams, and I'm a guy who was a fan of the BCS, so I think it says a lot where I'm very dissatisfied with a 4-team bracket when there are Power 5 conferences at play. You might as well just get these mid-majors in play as well. Make it an eight-team field. Just figure out a way to pay these guys. I'm tired of college football players not making the money they help the schools to make.
All right. Well, I'm going to interrupt our broadcast with breaking football news.
Oh, yeah?
The Tennessee Titans, who have set the world on fire this season, their quarterback, Zach Mettenberger, out for the rest of the season. How this impacts the playoff picture, no one can be too sure. Will it not at all because Tennessee is, what, currently 2-29?
And not expected to win another game anyhow. So yeah. They were just going to be a doormat the next 3 weeks anyhow.
There you go. You're 2-29, Tennessee Titans. Out a starting quarterback. All right, let's get to the upcoming games of the week.
Thursday night, we got Cardinals at Rams.
Maybe one of the biggest games of the week, Thursday night. I know that's a rare, rare treat.
I'll say this. The Cards are a 500 team on the road. They're undefeated at home this year, but only 500 on the road. So I'm looking forward to a strong upset by the Rams. I want to see that team with a winning record come the end of the season.
The Rams' defense has looked nuts. Every goddamn team in the West has just an insane defense.
Yeah.
That must be the worst division to play in.
By the way, Ahmad Brooks was benched in the San Francisco game. He missed a meeting on Tuesday, so he wasn't playing. That's another reason why Oakland won.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of a big deal when like a guy like that is sitting.
Yeah, you know what? I applaud Harbaugh for enforcing like that, though.
Whatever. He's a Michigan man. Screw Michigan, all right?
I'm with you.
Michigan. I don't like Ohio State, but I definitely like... do not like Michigan anywhere.
I do think it's pretty cool throwing an adult under a bus for sleeping through a meeting, though.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, yeah, sleeping through, just not showing up.
I roll my eyes at that guy. I'm not a big Jim Harbaugh fan. I'm
not a big discipline guy, but that's one of those things that must annoy the living F out of anyone.
There's a way to handle it. For some reason, when Belichick does it, it doesn't bother me. But when Harbaugh does it, I'm like, you're such a prick.
Such a dong. Such an unlikable dong. All right, well, Steelers at Falcons. This is another contest, albeit not nearly as even as the Cards at Rams. But Steelers at Falcons, you're talking two guys in the playoff mix.
I mean,
by virtue of the horrible NFC South, which I used to roll my eyes at, but now as the season concludes, I can't tell you how much I laugh my ass off at seeing like a 3-8-1 team in the playoff mix. Like, I wish there was a division that laid a big fat turd every year, like the NFC South is. Like, I thought it was laughable, but this is great. We've got the Steelers squaring off. The Falcons are going to be, as of tonight, when they are going to get their mud holes stomped, you know, by the Packers at home, they're going to be 5-8, and we're talking about them in the playoff discussion in week 15.
Listen,
I love it.
You gotta give Atlanta some room to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. New Orleans just beat the Steelers last week.
I mean, the Falcons are passable at home, and not only that, what was the team like last month that the Steelers were heavily favored to beat, and they just got dropped by them, like embarrassingly?
No, it was New Orleans.
Was it New Orleans?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that was in Pittsburgh, and now they're having to travel to Atlanta. So we'll see how that goes for them, man.
Yeah, that one will make me laugh my ass off if the Steelers drop it.
They have a losing record right now against the NFC South, by the way, because they also lost to Tampa Bay.
Yeah, they're the only team, period, out of the North to have dropped a game to the NFC South, and they have dropped two.
So, let's see how they do. Big Ben has been a frustrating player to watch for many years to me because he is so inconsistent. When he's great, he's unstoppable. But, man, for the most part, I just think he's a dunce out there. I hope they lose. I hope they lose.
All right. Bengals at Browns. Browns are kind of fading away with the whole quarterback storm that's taking place there, but the Bengals haven't helped their own case.
Both those teams are in crisis right now. That's a great game to watch. Mm-hmm. It might be a dog turd. It might be ugly, but, you know, it's going to be fun to watch.
Could be a sexy, sassy cat fight as well. Claws and fur are flying. 49ers at Seahawks, 4 p.m. One of those games that you can, you know, based upon last year's records, you would have gone, oh, this is what we wait for. This is our December ball. You know what? Seahawks crushed the 49ers in their house a couple weeks ago.
Don't you want to look? Don't you want to peek to see if the 49ers get any better?
They're not going to. I mean, it's probably going to be the 4 p.m. game in the area, so I'll be watching.
All eyes should be on Kaepernick at this point. The real question now for the 49ers is not whether they make the playoffs, but is this your quarterback for the future? That's the real question you got to ask yourself.
I don't think it's much of a question, man. I think that dude's gone. That really wouldn't shock me.
He could really help himself if he pulled off the upset this week. I'm not going to say it's impossible for them to win.
Oh, that single-handedly keeps him in.
Yeah.
Mark my words.
Well, he better work hard at practice this week, man.
I think if you look at that dude and it's like you gave up both of the games to the Seahawks, which, you know, barring Lynch leaving at the end of the season, we're probably going to have problems with for several years to come, you're gone. Like, that makes your job much easier. Just being like, you suck against them. We play them a lot. Bye. And he does. Colin Kaepernick, as bad as he has been overall this year, his past several years, he has had specific struggles with the Seahawks. You know what I'm saying? It's like being a heavyweight in the late 80s. And it's like, I'm really good at beating everyone but Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
That dude really kicks my dick in the dirt. It's like, well, guess what? You're not getting many titles then, buddy. Sorry. And the Sunday night game is the Cowboys at Eagles, which is rife with both NFC East playoff picture implications as well as NFC wildcard.
There's a lot of great divisional games this week, man. I think that Broncos Chargers game at 4 is also worth looking at. I know that we're not taking the Chargers serious when it comes to like taking over the AFC West lead, but I do think that's a team which should make the playoffs.
A team which will lose week 17 or...
I mean, they really need this, I think, to feel better about the wild card. I think we'll see how they play against the Broncos, so I think it's a game worth watching.
I'll watch it. I'm sure it's, especially given what's been going on with Peyton lately, I think it'll be watchable. I don't think we'll have it locally, so my decision might be made for me.
But you got a lot of 7-6 teams in the AFC right now, and it's going to be interesting to watch them as they lose that seventh. Who's going to lose that seventh? Who's hungry enough to keep alive for one more week? Because I think, you know, Texans playing the Colts this week, that could be an interesting game if the Texans can win, make the division interesting. Dolphins are playing the Patriots, man. So, I mean,
I know, I was
that
bullish
could be
on
their
up
season.
Until a couple weeks ago, but we said last week that Dolphins-Ravens game, although it didn't sound dramatic on paper, actually had some pretty deep playoff implications.
Well, now the Dolphins have to beat the Patriots. I mean, they have no margin for error now because they failed to beat the Ravens. That was the problem with that game because, you know, it's not the most exciting thing in the world when you see the Patriots in December on your schedule. When you're playing at New England and you, like, practice in Miami, it's not a good look.
No, it sucks. You're like, I miss doing cocaine off of Cuban asses. I like that part of my schedule.
Going to have a different kind of snow up in New England.
Let's go out on that chuckle. All right, folks, this was Papa's Football Podcast. I'm John Papa Giorgio, joined by Howard Flood again today. Thank you, Howard.
My pleasure.
PFpod.com is the show's site. If you want to just stream at work, that's the easiest way to do it. If you do podcast subscribing via either the podcast app on any iDevice or using Stitcher on iDevices as well as Droid devices, look up Papa's Football Podcast, PAPA'S. Subscribe, rate, review, tell your friends. That's, word of mouth is how we do the majority of our promotion. All of our promotion. You can also find Papa's Basement and spelled the same way, the PAPA'S on, you know, using the same means. That's the comedy show we do in addition to the sports show. Last but not least, The Spookies, a comic I do with a buddy of mine. Look it up, thespookiescomic.com. All right, I guess that's it. At Papa's Basement on Twitter and Instagram for me. You're coming up with some handle that we'll remember at some point.
Yeah, I got to work on that, man.
All right, till the next one. We're out of here.
Peace.